Hey everybody, back to soccer for the week. If you're watching Premier League football, then you certainly can't miss this weekend's rivalry matchup between Leeds United and Manchester United. In the first match of the doubleheader, Manchester United fought back from two goals down to draw 2-2 at Old Trafford. Now, Leeds United is perhaps America's favorite team, with U.S. men's national team duo Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, as well as Brandon Aaronson, and also managed by one of the few Americans to coach in Europe, Jesse Marsh, until Monday, when Jesse Marsh was fired. Leeds United has an uphill battle against relegation, and their survival is paramount. But the club is now scrambling to find a new manager in a very important stretch of the season. I wanted to bring on an expert today to give us all the goods, to shed light on the drama, and to give us insight into what's happening behind the scenes with America's favorite Premier League team. Please welcome Graham Smith, who covers Leeds for the Yorkshire Evening Post and is the host of Inside Elland Road. Hey, Graham, thank you so much for being here today.
Not a problem.
Oh, man. Okay, let's get to it. Lots of drama going on right now in your neck of the woods. Jesse Marsh was fired after a disappointing first half of the season. Leeds sits just above the relegation zone on goal difference. The Leeds players have no time to dwell. They obviously meet rivals Manchester United twice this coming week. Man, talk to us about the timing of this decision to fire Jesse Marsh.
I think, to be brutal, the timing is the only aspect that you could question about this decision.
Okay.
I think for a lot of fans, it would not have been an unwelcome decision had it come before the World Cup break. But I think the strength of feeling in the away section after Sunday's game at Nottingham Forest really swayed the board. And the performance, coupled with that reaction, I think, the writing had been on the wall, I think, for a while. And I think this was the final straw for the board. I mean, this was the third time that I can recall that fans at a game have chanted for his removal. And whenever a manager loses the fans, it's always very difficult to get them back. And it's difficult to see a way in which it's not going to crop up again whenever you have a crisis. So the fact that they're playing Manchester United twice in a week is unfortunate. It's a terrible quirk of the fixture list, specifically this season. But I think it had to happen.
So you're the expert here. I personally can't make sense of this. America's own very successful coach in our eyes in America, Jesse Marsh, and two clubs he's been fired within a year in Germany and then obviously in the Premier League. Is there something that we don't know? Why can't he break through in Europe? Obviously, besides his stint in Austria, is there something, a style, a characteristic, a managerial style that we don't see?
At Leeds, it was difficult because you have to remember who he was following. Marcelo Bielsa was a legend at Leeds and was successful at Leeds, but he also inspired Leeds fans to love football again after years of apathy, because his style of football until the latter stages when the team was truly lost and I think he had to be fired, the football that Bielsa brought to Elland Road was scintillating. And the style of football that Jesse Marsh brought, it was difficult for fans to reconcile themselves with that style. And that, I think, even though they stayed up, which albeit was on the final day of the season by a single victory, it was only ever, in my mind, going to take two or three defeats to have the grumbles start again in the fan base. And, the season started so well with the wins over Wolves and Chelsea, a draw at Southampton that should have been a win. But after that, victories were just so much of a struggle. And in the Premier League, if you can be very competitive without winning games, and that's a recipe for disaster. And under Jesse Marsh, that's what Leeds were this season. They were in games. They looked good when they were chasing games. They never really had full control of games. The Chelsea game is the only game that really springs to my mind where they had control from start to finish. They always felt in a chaotic moment where they looked best when they were chasing. And in the Premier League, that's just that's dangerous, a dangerous place to be. And so it's hard to say where exactly Jesse went wrong, other than the fact that he couldn't get this team to win games. And that's, you know, that's what it came down to for the board.
Now, he tends to have Leeds play a fast, high pressure kind of football, which, you know, takes a lot of fitness, but a lot of people, experts, you know, obviously he might be up for the U.S. men's national team job now. So there's a lot of talk surrounding that. And people in the football world want to see, especially on the American side, the American team to be better with the ball. So be better offensively. And so often we like to have a fast, speedy game, really fall back on our fitness and our athleticism and pressuring the shit out of teams. And perhaps this style hasn't been successful for him in Europe. Perhaps it may be in the United States. We can talk about that soon. But I wanted to ask you, how is the mood of the players of the team?
It's interesting. I don't feel that the team ever stopped playing for him. Now, I think it's no secret that a player like Matthias Klik, who's just arrived in the MLS with DC United, I don't think he particularly saw eye to eye with Jesse's style. And I think he would have been one who hankered after the football, the best football of their lives that they played under Bielsa. But I never got the feeling that the players weren't trying for him or that he'd lost the dressing room. I was in Australia for the training camp in the summer. It was a very positive experience. I was in Spain for the World Cup break camp. And again, there was a lot of positivity around it. And that is one thing that I think Jesse Marsh is very good at, is keeping things upbeat, is trying to remove players from stress, and trying to keep the mood positive. But it was interesting that after the Forest game, Patrick Bamford made the comments about the tactical difficulty in the game that he himself couldn't fix. And whilst I don't think that was in any way intended as a dig in the ribs of his manager, I find it interesting that a senior player would come out and almost be that critical of the style or of the tactics. Mm-hmm. I don't think they stopped playing for him, but I just wonder if there was frustration there that what he had them doing wasn't getting results, because mm-hmm. they were working for him, they were running for him, they were putting in the required amount of pressing and intensity. They weren't getting rewarded for it. And in any team with any manager, that's eventually, I imagine, going to grit. But something else that I find quite interesting is that since the announcement, I mean, we're speaking now more than 24 hours after he was sacked, not a single player has posted on social media to wish him well, to say goodbye. Now, perhaps that will come in time. I'm fully aware that players will have contacted him privately and he'll have said goodbye to the players, and he'll remain, I'm sure, very close with Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson. But it's just strange that normally by this stage, somebody would have made a post on Instagram and wished him well, or said that they were sorry it hadn't worked out. It's just, it's a strange thing. But even still, I don't think that he'd lost the dressing room.
Unless the board has advised the players to do otherwise and focus more in on the two matches coming up.
I don't know. I don't know if some advice has been issued. I've not had that inclination from my dealings with the club over the last day or so, but I don't think it could possibly detract from, you know, the fact that they're about to play Manchester United. I wouldn't see that as a sensible kind of strategy.
A little bit of respect publicly. So it seems like Jesse Marsh, he lost the fans. Perhaps he didn't lose the locker room, which usually goes hand in hand. So I guess he still has that going for him, which is admirable to get the players' respect as a manager and know how to manage players. They weren't necessarily getting battered or even embarrassed. They had been close in a lot of the games this season. Do you believe it's a stroke of bad luck at all, or is it, you know, really put on Jesse Marsh?
It's hard to see this as bad luck. There were games in which they didn't seem to have any luck because they created chances. Like at Nottingham Forest, they could have been 2-1, 3-1 up at halftime. It's easier to look at the defensive issues that cropped up. You know, we asked him about the problems in fullback areas last season, and yet this season the big switch was still causing a huge issue. You know, if they didn't get the press right in the opposition half, the ball went from right to left, and suddenly you had a player in behind your fullback, he would cross it across the area, and there'd be another free man on the far side to stick it in because defenders were getting sucked in towards the ball. I saw that as a failure of the system, and the fact that players were all rushing after the ball to try and win it back, but then they were leaving themselves exposed in other areas. It also felt like he couldn't quite get the best out of a very potent attacking lineup. And when you consider the amount of money that's been invested in that team in both the summer and again in January, it's difficult to see an excuse arising, you know, anything you can point to say, well, he didn't really have this going for him. And when you look at the table, that's, you know, that's where all the kind of excuses fall away.
Yeah, he has to wear that badge, definitely, and take responsibility. I know Jesse Marsh a little bit. He helped us train on the U.S. women's national team, and he believed in those intricacies in defense. He believed in marking tight in the box. And we trained and we trained and we trained with him, and he was all about those X's and O's and those details that actually win you games. You know, you can spend the money, you can buy the great goal scorers. And perhaps, you know, you have to work together tactically, moving the ball forward and up the field, but you can still have that big money player. When it comes to defense, you have to iron those out. And that takes a coach that is very attuned to details to do that. But that is what wins games. And you have to have a great defense. And that's what drives me crazy, because I know the man, and he always believed in the decision-making, in the back line shifting together, knowing when to drop, of not losing your men in the box. And it seems very simplistic, but those are the things that you have to do as a manager.
Yeah. And even things down to the basics of defending set pieces, you know, that cropped up as an issue. But I felt like an issue would crop up, perhaps not the big switch, but some other issues, and he would give it attention and there would be an improvement. But then it would come at the cost of an issue elsewhere in the pitch. So he couldn't quite marry defensive solidity with attacking potency and fluidity. And, you know, specifically in possession, it felt at times like they would go quite direct. They would try and play off second balls, but it was all too congested. It was too narrow. And that was a big frustration for fans who like to see width. They've got an array of attacking talent out wide leads. And it is a myth to say that Jesse Marsh doesn't play with width, because Willie Nyonto in particular hugs the left touchline, but it's not the same on both sides of the pitch, or it hasn't been in recent weeks. And that kind of the scramble that they would create with the counter pressing. And then I guess he looked for quick, direct passing into the area, but they really struggled to cut teams apart. And if the opposition got the first goal, it was always really difficult to see where Leeds were going to find a way through, because as Nottingham Forest showed, Steve Cooper made changes at halftime in personnel and tactics. They fell into a low block and Leeds couldn't break them apart. And the further the game went on, the more clear it became that Jesse Marsh didn't have an answer to that. So we had one manager changing the game and one manager unable to change the game. And I think that ultimately proved a step too far for the board to say, you know, we can give him more time, we can back him.
So going into this week, Michael Scubala, rookie coach, is obviously going to, he's being tasked with managing this doubleheader. How is he feeling? He's a rookie coach, not a lot of experience either. How is he feeling right now?
Well, he successfully managed to give a 9-minute press conference earlier. He kept it incredibly brief, kept it very simple, which I think was probably wise. It's not just him. He was the lead today in the press conference, but he's got Chris Armas alongside him, which is a curiosity to me that somebody who was so close with Jesse Marsh, who has just arrived in Leeds, is staying on as Jesse departs. I find that very interesting. And also a development coach who has been working with Scubala called Paco Gallardo, who's got experience in Spain. So the three of them have got to take Leeds to Manchester United. And I think the task is to avoid humiliation.
Is that the task?
I struggle to see a way in which they pull off a miracle. They've had, you know, 24 hours with the team. And so they can't rewrite the script. They can't reinvent the wheel. They can't suddenly turn up with a brand new system and a new philosophy. All they've been able to do really is tweak things. And I think he used the word pragmatism, which says to me, we're going to dig in and we're going to fight and they'll possibly look to break. to hit Manchester United on the break. But you're playing a team that's in such good form, a team that's so clinical at finishing chances. It's a massive ask. But the upside is that there's no real expectation. And if Skubala and co. manage to put together a solid defensive performance and somehow nick a result, it won't really matter how they got there or the style of football they played. It will just be remembered as a you know, famous result for a caretaker boss. So it's not quite a no-lose situation, because it is Manchester United and they hate mm-hmm. Manchester United with a passion that you can't really understand unless you're Leeds. But I think the pressure is off in terms of the caretaker managers.
The pressure may be off, but try not to be embarrassed. That's a tough role to play as a manager. You want to go in there, you want to show that you're capable, especially in hard times. You want to be the leader. You want to show no nerves and a sense of leadership and calmness for your players. But ultimately, if the goal is to not get embarrassed, you're not going after a win. And that's always tough to see in football. But I guess one can hope for what most people are saying is the impossible. So there is that. So I think Leeds fans will be very hopeful, very excited going into this match. Obviously, we know that things can change really quickly. Is there a viable chance for Leeds to stay out of relegation at this point?
I think there's loads of time. You know, that Jesse Marsh came in last season with 12 games mm-hmm. remaining, won four of them and stayed up. There are some teams in the Premier League that are really struggling right now, so there will be candidates for relegation besides Leeds. I think if they get the appointment right, I think that whoever comes in is inheriting a very attractive squad, a much, much better squad than they had this time last year. I think the options that they brought in were not just good signings for Jesse Marsh, but good signings. You know, Tyler Adams is just a fantastic player. Mark Rocca is a wonderful passer in midfield. And then, like I talked about before, the attacking options they have. I think a very good coach could get a very good tune out of this team. And I think the defense is probably where they need the most attention, the most work, just to shore that up. They've got some issues around left back and who plays there and whether or not they'll be good enough in that situation. But I think there's leaders in the team, there's character in the team, there's technical ability, there's goals in the team. I think they could be fine as long as they get the appointment right.
Well, interviews are already underway. I believe West Ham boss Carlos Corberan is rumored to be the top candidate. You probably know more than I do, of course. But how soon will this decision be made?
Well, we were expecting that it may take a few days, because the managers, that the top candidates, their front runners, are all employed. They're all currently working. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to negotiate their release with their clubs, and those things can take time. But the club's chairman, Andrea Radrazzani, as is his wont, has taken to Twitter to reply to a fan this evening and suggested that there may be white smoke tonight or tomorrow. So things will maybe move quicker than we expected. It hasn't always been the best strategy for him, that kind of tweet. He did something similar on transfer deadline day in the summer, and the player he told fans to get behind welcoming opted not to come to Leeds. And it was an egg on face situation. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But they do want to make a swift appointment. They feel like they're well on with it. They feel like they have good candidates, and that the 49ers and Radrazzani are aligned on the direction they want to take. So we'll see who they end up with. But if somebody was in place for Sunday's game, I think it would just be a bit of a confidence boost for everyone. Just to have the new man in place already. But ultimately, the games that really matter are the ones coming up against Everton and Southampton. Yeah. You know, games against Man United are important because they're your rivals, but your fight is at the bottom of the league, and that's where Everton and Southampton are. So those are the games that I think Leeds really need to be targeting for victories.
Of course. Talk to us about Weston McKennie. Obviously, he was persuaded by Jesse Marsh to join Leeds just in January. On loan in the transfer window from Juventus, and now Jesse Marsh is gone. How do you think he's handling it? He didn't even get a start under Jesse Marsh yet. I think he came in as a sub for one game, and that was it. He was gone within a week.
Yeah, it's a strange one for him. But he's a professional footballer, and managers go. Now, this is probably a unique situation for him, given his age and his experience. But I think Leeds have always done quite a good job with their signings of convincing them of the project or their role in the project. And that will not have exclusively come through Jesse Marsh. The director of football, Victor Orta, will have had a big say in that. They sometimes get the owner involved as well as the manager, you know, to map out the prospective future for a signing. And it's not like McKennie is in an alien land with no former teammates or no friends on the team. You know, he's got one of his best friends on the team in Tyler Adams. He knows Brendan very, very well. He's been there now for almost a couple of weeks, and obviously has struck up a friendship with Crescencio Somerville as well. I think it'll probably have come as a bit of a shock to the system, and he might have had some thoughts about, well, what happens to me now? But every player in the dressing room will be having those thoughts, because whichever manager comes in might have a completely different view on individuals than Marsh did. You know, a player who was a trusted general under Marsh might find his position under threat because the new manager sees something different in somebody else in his position. So it'll keep everyone on their toes, not just Weston McKennie, but it probably has been a bit of a whirlwind for him, and quite difficult to get his head around.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if he knew the long-term plans or not, or if the board should have perhaps communicated the long-term plans. You know, many players make decisions based on the managers, and to be gone within a week, that would be a tough pill to swallow, to not feel like you weren't being told the truth to some degree. So I imagine it would be a shock to Weston McKennie. How are the Leeds fans embracing the American players? So Brendan Aaronson, you obviously brought up, and Tyler Adams as well, and obviously Weston.
Well, they really took to Brendan at the start of the season, because he got off to a flying start, and he looked, even for his age, he looked accomplished in the Premier League. It's not been a consistent picture for Brendan since then. He has struggled to produce in terms of goals and assists. He's really struggled, I think, with the physicality of the league, which is something that some of my colleagues stateside pointed out last January might be an issue if he'd gone to Leeds in that window, just because of his age and because of where he is in his physical development. And it has proved the case that physicality, it has been the way for teams to shut him down. You know, they've targeted him almost, and he hasn't really been able to respond to that. So Marsh addressed his confidence quite recently, said that he was quite low on confidence. He almost needed taken out of the firing line a little bit, taken out of the limelight. So he dropped out of the starting lineup. And the switch to the 4-3-3 that Marsh brought in left Aaronson in a bit of an awkward place, because there were probably better options out wide in the front three. And then McKennie's come in, who's possibly a more solid option, more physical box-to-box option in the midfield three. So he's in a slightly strange situation, but he's very young and he's got a lot of time and he's got a long contract. And he has enjoyed a measure of popularity at Leeds, but I think fans have been a little frustrated of late. The one they've really taken to is Tyler Adams, because he has he's had a consistent level in his performances throughout the season. You know, he is almost always a 7, 7.5, 8 out of 10 midfielder, gets around the pitch, not always great on the ball, normally very efficient and good on the ball, but it's his work off the ball that I think endears him to Leeds fans, because they like to see a player getting stuck in and showing no respect to the opposition. And of course, he went to the World Cup and had a tremendous World Cup on and off the pitch, you know, represented the club and his country admirably. So he's had a really great time of it, made himself a bit of a hero already. McKennie, they just haven't seen enough of to form an opinion, really. There was a lot of excitement about his signing, because you're signing a player from Juventus, you know, the Serie A giants, even if they are going through a difficult time. And his link to Adams, it made a lot of sense for people that, you know, this is a guy who's partnered Tyler for the national team, so surely he can do the same at club level. So we'll wait and see when it comes to Weston and what kind of impact he can have and what the new manager makes of him. But I'd say overall, it's been fairly positive, the kind of American influence in the team this season.
Well, talking about men's U.S. men's national team players, let's talk a little bit about the American side. Get away from club for a second. But sticking with Jesse Marsh, after his firing, he became a front runner to take over the men's national team, which is probably considered falling upwards, getting, you know, going forward, even though he just got fired. He does seem like he's open to it. He's always claimed to have wanted to be the coach of the national team. It wouldn't nearly be as expensive for United States Soccer Federation to get this American coach. Do you think he'd be successful at this level?
It's a really difficult question because international football and club football are such different things. And somebody who can be successful in one can't necessarily be successful in another. And just because Jesse's failed at Leeds, it doesn't mean that he couldn't do it for the US men's national team. I'd be very interested to see how he would do and how he would cope without the day-to-day contact with the group, because you can tell that he loves coming into training every day. He loves being around the group every day, which is why I think the training camps were so positive for him, because he got a buzz from that. So I think as a man who could put together a very good training camp, you know, that would stand in his favor for an international job. But I wonder how he would cope in the weeks and months without fixtures, without, you know, having the players around, without training. You know, if he wasn't coaching on a day-to-day basis, I wonder how he would feel, which makes me wonder, will he try and pop up in a club capacity again? But then you think, he wrote that piece for The Athletic at the start of the World Cup, which read to me very much like almost like a LinkedIn advertisement, you know, for, I could do this job. I would love this job. Not yet, but I'd love it for the World Cup on home soil. I can well imagine that Jesse Marsh would see that as a bit of a dream scenario, managing the US men's national team in the US in a World Cup. And it'll be interesting to see if he is quite as good a fit as some think. I'm not sure everyone is entirely sold on the idea, because obviously there have been issues for him in club football now at two successive clubs. Now, obviously at Leipzig, there were extenuating circumstances and personal circumstances that impacted on him. And he admitted he wasn't quite the right fit for that job, but he wasn't quite the right fit for Leeds either. So there are definitely question marks, but Jesse Marsh is such you'll know yourself, he's such a great guy, such a lovely personal, very sociable guy, a people person, that I think anyone who's come into contact with him would probably want him to have that kind of to make a go and make a success of that kind of a role, because it would just be such a great story for him. And as such a high profile US coach, it's natural for him to be linked with it, but whether or not it would work, I have absolutely no idea.
Now, I know his family loves traveling around Europe, living in Europe, speaking a million different languages, but ultimately timing is everything. And he is the most experienced U.S. candidate available, essentially unmatched really in U.S. soccer circles, you know, with experience managing in Europe, in top leagues in Europe. So his name should be up at the top, in my opinion. But again, I don't know if he's the man to take the American side all the way to winning a World Cup. A lot has to change on the American side. You know, there was a good push this World Cup, but you're still not going to beat the greatest teams, even though, you know, we can put up some good performances. So I still think we're looking to go deeper into the depths, into the pockets of U.S. soccer to really claim an expensive, well-experienced coach in order to take our men's national team all the way in the next World Cup that's being hosted here in the United States and obviously Mexico and Canada. But we shall see what happens. I do wish the best for Jesse Marsh. I know perhaps he'd be great at coaching the men's national team. You say that you think he might struggle not having that contact with the players day in and day out, but perhaps he'll have more camps. And I think he would really thrive in, like you said, those situations where they're having long-term camps and double days and really creating an atmosphere that he would want to create going into the World Cup. So there are a lot of positives to his personality coaching the men's national team. But again, I think a lot of American fans are waiting for U.S. soccer to pull out the big bucks and to surprise everybody.
Yeah, you know, like you said, experienced foreign coaches are expensive, but they also have their upsides, you know, particularly if they have experience of managing internationally. You know, it's just an interesting quirk that Marcelo Bielsa has been linked to so many national team jobs ever since he left Leeds United. That would be a turn up for the books, but I don't know if US soccer would be quite willing to hand over the keys to every decision that had to be made. That you know, that's what Marcelo would
require. That tends to hold us back sometimes within the federation. They are known to micromanage many different areas, of course. And you're right, I don't think they're going to give him the set of keys.
Yeah, but I think Jesse has to be in the conversation simply because of the fact that he has now experienced three leagues in Europe and it hasn't gone smoothly in two. You know, at Salzburg, he won things. Salzburg, there is an asterisk because of their financial might in comparison with all the competitors, which is ironically something that Jesse kind of railed against when he was over here, you know, talking about the fairness and how MLS and American sports, every team starts with the same chance of winning a championship at the start of the season. That's not like that here in English football. It wasn't like that in Austria either, you know, when he managed there. But he'll definitely be in the conversation. I'm just interested to see what his immediate take is on what's happened to him. And when he first breaks cover and puts out a statement or a Instagram post or maybe something to the League Managers Association, and if he does so this week, just what it is that he wants to say about. And I'm quite sure that he will do media because he's a very media-friendly manager. And I'm sure we'll hear from him in due course as to what is coming next. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we heard his intentions as to the US job and whether or not he's going to throw his hat in the ring, because he can't sit around for too long if that's a job that he wants.
Well, I would expect that we hear from him, like you said, this week, maybe in 24 to 48 hours. I expect that he will make a comment soon, perhaps say goodbye publicly to his team and the players and the fans. But we shall see. Graham Smith, you are the expert at Leeds. You know, you cover for Yorkshire Evening Post. You are the expert, and I can't thank you enough for bringing your expertise, your insight onto Hope Solo Speaks for all of our soccer listeners, football fans, of course. And I'll be thinking about you come Sunday. I'm nervous, and I'm nervous for you. I'm nervous for the fans, but I wish you guys all the best.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.